filing, that's not the issue. It's getting people to believe in what you're doing. It's getting people to get behind you and say, yeah. And it's the same way with investing. It's whether it's a private investor, whether it's hard money, whatever, you have to get a bank, a friend, a somebody to believe in you.
This is going to be a good one, guys. Before we get going, make sure you jump over on YouTube and check out the Daily Real Estate Investor channel. This episode's there on video, as well as evergreen topics on real estate investing, as well as daily shorts. Welcome back for another episode of the Daily Real Estate Investor Podcast. I am excited today to have a good friend of mine and my broker, Bo Miles, with us on the podcast. Tony, what's going on, man?
Oh, not much, man. It's a beautiful Thursday morning. Can't complain about that.
That's awesome. Bo, welcome, sir.
Thanks, guys, for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, man. We're excited to have you. So Bo and I met, I guess it was a few years ago.
Yeah.
When I had just gotten on the Bigger Pockets podcast on my episode there. And Bo reached out and we connected and went and had lunch. And we started chatting about this concept of possibly starting a brokerage that saves agents a lot of fees and whatnot. And I wanted Bo to tell that story. And I wanted him to walk us through what he's done with building his brokerage. I know that will interest a lot of you that are working currently as agents, or maybe you're a broker and you're working with another agent and you've thought about starting your own brokerage before. I wanted Bo to share his story. So Bo, tell us a little bit about you first, and then let's get into your story.
Yeah. So I'm Bo. I am, as of last Sunday, 38 years old now. The most important thing to me, one is my faith, but number two are my wife and two kids. I have a beautiful, wonderful wife, who helps me out. And then I have six on Monday. So I have a 6 and an 8-year-old. That's my most important thing. You know, if you wanted to ask me about real estate, I love that. It's super fun, but that's it. But I am also the owner and broker of Essential Real Estate. Technically, our legal name is Essential Property Management, because we also do that. And I have a passion and a desire for investing and helping agents just kind of grow and build their business.
That's awesome, man. Yeah, I love to hear that your faith is the most important thing. Tony and I, that's exactly how we feel. And the purpose of our show is to help the listener achieve financial freedom through real estate investing. And the reason for that, Tony and I are very passionate about this. We want you guys to be able to do work you love, and we want you to be able to change the world, make a positive impact from a perspective of helping others. And this is our way to hopefully do that as we grow. And we want you guys to be able to do the same thing. As you know, life's not about just stacking up money. It's about making a positive impact as well. We got to earn a living, right? But
yes,
we all want to be doing the right thing with the talents that God blessed us with. So Bo, let's get into your story, man. Tell us how you got into real estate, and then what prompted you to start building the brokerage.
Yeah, I'll make it as short as I can. As you know, Josiah, I am not great at short stories, but I will do my best. But the long and short is this: I moved to Huntsville about 12, 13 years ago, Madison area, so they touch, so we call it Huntsville. We moved here, and I was actually working for a church as their AV engineer. Like, I did all their technical stuff, and that kind of came and went. And about the time I was transitioning out of that, I began selling AV equipment at a local company here in town, and my wife was getting her degree in counseling, like your wife, Josiah. And she was getting her degree and basically took her final exam and called me on the way. It was in Birmingham, and called me and said, "Hey, I passed." And said, "This is great." And she said, "But I don't want to do this." And I went, "What?" And she goes, "Like, yeah, I passed. I'm done. I've taken everything." But she was pregnant with our daughter at the time. And she said, "The baby was kicking me the whole time. Like, I want to be home with our kids." And what a blessing that we had, that we could do that. No problem. Where I was working, I was making enough, no problem. During this whole kind of thing, there was this thread with me and some of my best buddies. We would always get together. We'd talk about the Bigger Pockets podcast. We would constantly be talking about investing. And wouldn't it be cool if, wouldn't it be cool if, wouldn't it be cool if, a lot of that kept coming up. Well, 3 months passes from that call. And my wife goes, but I want to make some money for the family. What can I do to help make money? I was like, I don't know. Get on Etsy. Are you crafty? Can you do something? And so finally, we kind of landed on real estate. And I've always loved it and had a passion for it, but just never dove into that world. Fast forward, I ended up getting my license too. Well, as good real estate agents do, we start looking at houses every day for us. And so when we do, we actually find one right down the road. And my wife one day says, well, what do you want to do with this house? And I said, well, I want to keep it and rent it out, but I know you're a little nervous. She went home, she prayed over it, and literally woke up the next morning and leaned over and said, hey, I feel like God's telling me to tell you, do whatever you believe is right. And I thought it was a trap. I was like, this can't be this simple. This can't be this easy, right? No way. Well, it wasn't. We listed our property about a week later for rent. The next day it was rented out. People moved in, and for 1 year, they didn't call. It was more of a B+, A- kind of property. They didn't call. It was kind of easy. And I was like, why would anybody pay 10% of rent for that? And so that's where, and we'll dive a little bit more into, but that's kind of where our property management side began. Well, then COVID hit. By the way, I quit my full-time job in February of 2020, March 2020. The world stops. I'm panicking, thinking, what have I done to my family? Little did I know real estate would still be as great. So at this point, I'm selling and got properties that we're managing. I go down to the beach during COVID. I shouldn't admit that because I think it was illegal. We had somebody who let us into their house. And I go down, and you're going to laugh at this, but the real truth, Tony, and I've told Josiah this, is I have some weird panic attacks. And the number one place I will have it during the day is an unknown grocery store. So if I'm in a grocery store where I don't know where things are, I'm holding that. So I'm trying to get my hands up. I'm holding that cart white knuckled, right? Like I'm trying to get through it. But one way it helps is I'll put in headphones. Well, this guy named Josiah says that I'm listening to the Bigger Pockets podcast in the Walmart right outside of Destin. And this guy's like, I live in Huntsville, Alabama. I freak out. I think this is cool. I want to meet him. I message him. He calls me within an hour of messaging me on Instagram. And it's still to this day one of the most impactful conversations I've ever had. He doesn't know this part. But I was like, this is what I do. This is how I manage. I do a cheaper way. I do this and this and this. I really want to take you to lunch. Can I take you to lunch? I want to learn about you. I want to talk. And he kind of went, look, I'm not trying to be rude, but I'm real busy. And my family is my most important thing. So every time I choose to go to a lunch with you, I'm not going with them. So I want to make sure this relationship is actually beneficial before I kind of jump into that. And I was like, wow, I really appreciated that boldness, right? I really needed somebody to say that. So we tell him about the property management. He actually gives me a property to manage. He says, let's go get that lunch. Within 10 minutes, Josiah begins this idea of this brokerage that at this point I was with another one that I was paying out of my commissions over $18,000 a year to. And Josiah was like, wouldn't it be cool if there was this brokerage that like didn't charge based off of your sales, but just kind of charge a subscription fee? And I thought, man, that's cool. Josiah can go start that. Well, he texted me that night. He said, let's start this thing. And then through a bunch of series of events, kind of said, look, Bo, that was when he was diving heavily into Tennessee. And getting that, he was like, look, my schedule and what we're planning and we're moving and doing this, I'm not going to be in it. You go run with it. And so what we did is we started a brokerage with a cheaper cost to agents so that they could keep more of their money. And that's kind of how we do our property management. We try to give it back to the people in the end, again, to help support people with financial freedom and growing who they are and doing what they want to do.
Man, that's a very powerful story. No, I think, you know, key words that really stood out to me, number one is prayer. I love that, you know, how you and your wife, when you're coming to a critical decision, I know a lot of us, I struggle with this sometimes, don't take it up for prayer. But that's, we got to remember, I mean, we got one person that can solve all the problems, you know, if it benefits us, and that's God. Anyway, I don't want to, you know, this is not a religious show, but of course, you know, that just stood out to me. And it's hilarious that on that same interview that you heard Josiah while you were in Destin, I have a similar story. I mean, I mentioned in a previous episode, so I'm not going to go through the whole thing again, but it was very similar. It just happens to be that Josiah was my appraiser. And from there, I'm like, wait a minute, I know you. And it just went from there.
So
but,
cool.
But, you know, to give some value to our listeners, let's talk about, you know, you starting this brokerage, because I know not everybody, that's not easy to do probably. And it's not something that everybody has thought of. So go ahead and talk to us about, you know, how did you start it and the challenges that you ran into?
Yeah. So it's one, easier than you think, but two, harder than you think. And what I mean by that is this: look, you can fill out all the paperwork. That's not that hard. You know, it's, you know, the way I tell people is this: when you're starting a business, nobody's going to ask you for $1,000, but 10 people are going to ask you for $100. So you just kind of got to be ready for 10 people always come in to be this license and that license. You kind of got to just know that that's what's coming. But filing, that's not the issue. It's getting people to believe in what you're doing. It's getting people to get behind you and say, yeah. I mean, it's the same way with investing. It's whether it's a private investor, whether it's hard money, whatever, you have to get a bank, a friend, a somebody to believe in you. And that takes commitment on your own heart, in my opinion. And we got to where what actually happened was when Josiah had mentioned it first, I began to pray about it again. And then two, I began to talk to my friends about it. And all my friends who had been entrepreneurs, whether it was a structural engineer or a defense contractor or anything like that. And I remember really vividly, one of my friends looked at me and go, what happens if nobody joins? And I went, I'd probably save at least $12,000 a year by the time I bought the office and did this and paid for that. And they said, then why not go do that? And that was the night I kind of like went to bed and I looked at my wife and I said, I'm going to do this. And so it took a lot of, it took just that first step to commit to it. And so you began to have to believe in yourself and say, hey, look, this is something I can do. I have value to add to people. I have something that we can do to change the market. It also took me looking at the market and going, hey, real estate really hasn't changed in 20 years. You know, the way people are paying brokers really hasn't changed. The biggest invention in real estate is the internet and Zillow. And they're actively trying to get rid of real estate agents. So why not disrupt our local community and find these agents who are not necessarily getting a ton from their brokerage? An agent who's been doing this for 20 years is typically not going to training every week. But as a whole, they typically don't, or they're getting it online or they're doing it in some of their aspects. And so we began to kind of brainstorm with that and said, well, look, if you come over to us, pay us $3,000 a year, we may not offer that training. We may not offer those things, but we can still offer you support. We can still offer you encouragement. We can still hang out. We can do those things. And so we started kind of advertising that just through word of mouth. And we're up to 30 agents now. It's been about 2 years. We're up to 30 agents. Mm-hmm. I haven't even recruited, to be honest with you. The people who recruit are
word of mouth host
here is one of the guys who recruits for us. And so because what happens is these agents get into a closing and they're like, they're getting their checks and there's a check for $15,000. And my agents give up $50 of that. They're sitting there counting up around the five. This is how much I'm taking home. And, you know, it's my greatest honor when I get to write people their checks and pay them back. I've already got a guy who's been in the business for 19 years. And within 2 years with us, I've already written him his largest check ever. Mm. And it was I wrote him a $78,000 check. And I took $50.
Wow.
And it was the best day. Because for me, it's him. He earned that money. We're putting it back on you. Just like, let's take the example of y'all investing. You guys, when you've got a house, let's say you're doing a flip, it's on you at the end of the day. It's on you. The person driving that ship, the man in the arena, whatever you want to call it, extreme ownership, it's on you at the end of the day. And we're looking at our agents going, it's on you. You should be rewarded for that. And so that's kind of how it started and what we've done with it.
Yeah, I know we were talking about this earlier. My personal agent that I've used since 2019, Trey. Shout out to Trey Chambliss out there. Yeah. But I remember Trey, he was with another brokerage. I'm not going to disclose any names, but he was with another brokerage. And I believe he had several properties under contract. So it was going to be a huge loss for him if he transferred brokerage. And I was, you know, I actually, my personal home was under contract as well. And that was like, that's been my biggest purchase so far. And I remember Trey telling me, hey, you're going to be swapped with another agent from Matt Curtis. Why not? Oh, I already disclosed the name. Look at that. Oh, well, it is what it is. But but anyways, and Trey, you know, Trey took the risk. You know, he went ahead and left all those properties, left all those all that profit that he was going to make that year to focus on himself. And that's one of the things I love about, you know, what you're saying, Bo. You're focusing more on the people, on the agents versus the profits.
Absolutely.
And right now, honestly, I'm freaking out because right now I'm watching a lot of food shows, food documentaries.
Okay.
And that thing is, man, it's driving me nuts because it's like a lot of foods. It's anyways, we don't know what we put into our body.
Sure.
And the reason why I mentioned that is because a lot of the food industry focuses more on the profits versus, you know, the health of people. And I love that. I mean, what I take from what you just said is exactly that, you know, focus more on the people, on the relationship versus focusing on the profits. And I love that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I think the great takeaway here on what Bo has built with his brokerage is the idea that you can provide a lot of value for people in helping them save money. This is honestly one of the best ways to make content as well. If you can help people save money or make money, yep, then there's something in it for them. And anytime you can help someone make money or save money, you're going to be able to grow your business. So I have zero doubt that if Bo continues what he's doing, that his brokerage is going to grow from 30 to several hundred, if not thousands eventually, if he continues to scale. And the principle here is the same that's been used in other industries, right? It's if you can cut your costs down, cut your overhead down, and give more of the earnings back to the wage earner instead of the overhead, then there's going to be a lot of demand. So I think this strategy is a good one, Bo. And I kudos to you for taking the step out there in faith and starting your own thing and breaking away from, you know, the established thing. And this is going back to the man in the arena example. It's easy to sit in the stands and watch other people doing their thing.
Yeah.
And some people like sitting in the stands and trolling the people in the arena, while others like sitting in the stands and cheering for the people in the arena, but they don't ever get in the arena themselves. And the sad thing is that everybody listening to this right now has the ability to get into the arena. And I would encourage you in whatever it is you're really passionate about, like step out in faith, get in the arena, go put yourself out there. And yes, you will have people discouraging you. You will have people trolling you. You will have people also that support you, and you'll have people that don't do either, that just watch you and don't say anything encouraging and don't say anything negative. That's also a bit odd, you know?
Yeah.
But you'll have all of those. But the thing that it will do for you is it will level you up as a person. It will take you from a spectator to in the arena. And that does wonders for you as a professional because it develops a tenacity in you and an ability to persevere. And that will take you into a different level of doing business and personal development. So kudos to you, Bo, for taking that step in faith and moving out there and doing that. So tell me this.
Yeah.
For those out there that have thought of starting their own brokerage, what should they be thinking about as they look at leaving their current brokerage and starting their own thing or possibly going in with another broker?
Yeah. So that's multi-part, as I'm sure you could guess. One, the first question I would ask anybody who said, I'm thinking about starting it is, not why do it so you don't got to be in the industry. No, why are you wanting this? Because if you're wanting it just to make extra money, well, it's not really necessarily what it is. It could be. It depends how you scale it, how you grow it, what you do. So the first thing I would say is why. Number two, the second thing I would say is what are you currently getting that you cannot replace? So if you're leaving a brokerage, going to another one, or if you're starting your own, what are you getting from where you currently are that you cannot replace? And if you say, I don't have anything, then my first answer is going to be, yeah, I'd probably start that brokerage. I mean, because like that was me. Like I was at a great brokerage, but I realized all that training was still found on YouTube most of the time. So if I really wanted it, I could use resources to get that training. I could get, that was their biggest thing was training, training, training. And they were phenomenal at it. And I had no problems with the brokers, no problems with anybody. I just kind of realized I could make more money, but I also could replace the things I was getting. And then three, the thing, especially if you're starting your own, it's kind of what you said is how thick a skin do you got? You know, when I first started and it was just me, nobody cared. Got one or two agents, nobody really cared. Got four or fives, got a couple big names, got a couple of that. Started hearing a lot of my name and other people's purpose that they didn't know me, but were acting like they did and speaking about me and doing things that, you know, your option is to go and rebuttal or to keep your mouth shut. And my answer was the truth will always make itself known. And so because the truth will make itself known, carry yourself with character and integrity every step of the way and just push through those comments. And so they still happen. I still hear them. I don't really wish ill for them. So you got to be able to handle that. If it's going to bother you and you're going to be worried and you're going to, entrepreneurship in any form is not your game. You're very right. There will be people who are in the arena with you, who are in the stands, no matter where they are, who are going to tell you no. And I like to take those people when they tell me no. And I go, why? And they meet my best friend in the world. I've got to clarify. My best friend, other than my wife, she always hates one of them. My best not wife friend, if I come with any idea in the world, it could be an idea for a new software package. I don't care what it is. The first thing he does is he pokes holes in it. It's hard. You kind of have to get used to it. But he's like, cool, let's go. And he will be like, are you going to pay for this? What about this? What about? And I take those objections. And if I can't answer them, I'm not doing it. And so that's what I would tell you is if you can't answer the objections, don't go. But I could answer all the objections. I could handle those people talking. I knew why and I knew what I could replace. And so that would be my answer to anybody is get those four things ready to go and you'll be able to fly.
I love it. Anytime you're about to take a step out in faith and do something, you're going to have those people in your life, whether it be your mom, you know, maybe your spouse, some of your best friends, and maybe people you don't know, and they're well-meaning, but maybe they don't see the vision you see. And it can be especially tough coming from loved ones, right? Because
yes,
you respect and love them, but you also have to do what you have to do. And so it's like, you know, you obviously got to approach it different with, say, your mom versus your wife. Versus a stranger. But, you know, I love Gary Vee on this topic because he always says, you know, you don't ignore those people or cut those people out. You just say, I love you, but I'm going to go ahead and pursue this as long as it's obviously healthy for your marriage and your relationship with your parents and whatnot. But I love you, but this is what I need to do. And you can do that when you feel like you have a clear calling and a clear vision on what you have to go after. And you know, another part of this is like, you don't know all the steps when you start off on an entrepreneurial journey and somebody can say, hey, here's the 10 reasons why this isn't going to work. And you're like, I'm looking at those reasons. And yeah, I see you have some valid points there, but I still think it's going to work, you know, and you don't have to have all the answers before you start. And I want to encourage those of you who are thinking about starting, you know, don't throw caution to the wind and just start. But at the same time, after you've done your homework and you've thought about it and you've put prayer into it and you've done your homework and research and looked into the data, whatever, talked to people who've done it before.
Yeah.
You can go ahead and start and you're not going to know everything on the front end and you're going to have to figure it out as you go. That's part of the entrepreneurial journey.
I build my parachute on the way down way more than I've built it in a plane. And I have a lady who works for me who is going to build it, unpack it, build it, unpack it, build it and unpack it. And I'm like, I'm already halfway down to the ground, right? And it's you have to have both sides in a business to really help you. And so, yeah, I tell people just all the time, I'm like, I don't know, we'll figure it out. And they're like, what do you mean? And I'm like, the problems make themselves clear. It's just a hurdle. You just got to jump it or go under it or go around it. You figure it out. And if that worries you, then you're probably not the guy. I mean, goodness gracious, just investing in real estate alone. Gosh, so I'm a property manager. I manage 190 properties. Last night, we had a bunch of storms here. I'm waiting for the calls. A fence is down. Roof is messed up. Windows got broke. Got a leak in the house. I'm ready. I like, okay. And do I have the answer for how we're going to fix it? Nope. I got people, but I don't know when. I don't know how. I don't know what we're going to do, but we'll get it right. We'll make it right. We'll call enough people till we get the answer. And so you have to constantly be flexible. And you're right. You don't know everything. I didn't know that, you know, being an entrepreneur, starting a brokerage, having a property management company, still selling meant that, hey, I'm going to probably work 7 days a week. I'm probably going to work 80 hours a week. I'm going to have a lot of conversations of work-life balance with my wife that I get off track quite a lot with. And so I agree with you. You don't know everything going in. But to listen to the wise people around you is important. And be able to answer their contradictions, definitely. And Vivid Vision talks about it, you know, Josiah, we talk about that a lot. But they talk about in like the first chapter about, if I were to tell you about a movie where a woman is in fields and singing about the, and they're talking about the Sound of Music. And like, had you not seen Sound of Music, even a great description of it probably is not going to get you there. But then if you go through and give even more detail, more detail, more detail, you can really paint that picture. And when you paint that picture for people, that's where it starts getting some gas and it starts there.
Will do. I mean, I agree 100% with what you guys said. It's like a lot of investors, well, something that they run into when they're wanting to get started, they get hung up on the little things that really make no sense. A lot of the ones I see, oh, I don't have an LLC. Let me figure out how to, you know, get an LLC. Or, you know, they don't even practice on analyzing properties and they're afraid to take that jump. But what I always tell people is, you know, practice, set you a time frame, practice for that time frame. And honestly, if you don't make your move by this date, then don't do it at all. Because that's really all it takes. It just takes some, you know, some guts to finally, and like you were saying, Josiah, jump, you know, with a leap of faith to start your business. So, Bo, talk real quick. Year one, talk to me from when you started year one throughout the years, where are you at now? You know, how many agents year one, year two? And then what's your future plans for your brokerage and your company?
So I don't have the exact numbers, but we're really only into like 2.5 years right now. Mm-hmm. Really, when we got through with year one, my goal was to have 12 agents. And I think we had 20. We had 15. Year two, my goal was like, let's get to 25. And we basically ended there. And now I've slowed down some of the, I haven't recruited, but I've kind of slowed down some of that for a couple of reasons. To be honest with you, our property management has grown so much. We've doubled every year for the last 4 years. And so we're just constantly adding. And so because of that, some systems kind of got left behind. So I'm kind of going, hey, I'm not going to keep building bridges that are not going to be able to be fulfilled. Mm-hmm. And so I'm kind of putting some effort into that. But now we're actually about to start up a business coach. We're working on scripts and I'm about to kind of hand off a lot of my responsibilities to the people who work with us, Melissa and Jennifer. They work with us and they're kind of handling a lot of that property management side now. And I'm going to handle a little bit. You know, I'm going to handle the onboarding. I'm going to handle like some major tasks, those little things like that, that are simple and easy. They're going to handle the rest. I'm then going to go start just recruiting. So when you say, what's the vision? I had somebody ask me one time and I was kind of afraid to say it because I thought it was kind of embarrassing. And now I said, I'm just going to do it. As Josiah said, for the rest of my life, this will be here. So, I'll go ahead and say it. I do not have a cap for this. My goal is to be in every state and to help benefit agents and to have thousands upon thousands of agents. I want to be one of the biggest brokerages in the world, not because I want that money, not because I need that fame, not because I need any of that, but because I truly believe the real estate industry needs a change in the way they're doing things. And I believe we, at this moment, provide the best option for that. So what we're going to do is kind of grow Huntsville. We're going to kind of make sure we have all the systems, kind of like what we're doing with property management over the next year or two. Really kind of do that. Then we'll start hitting the surrounding areas, and we'll continue to grow as long as the Lord lets, as long as we have the energy, as long as we have the desire. But yeah, my goal right now is 100 agents is my big target. I was hoping to get to 70 this year. Based off of how little I've recruited, that would be an almost impossible number this year. But I would say by December of 2024, I want to be between 75 and 100 agents. And after that, I want to be, because at that point, it starts compounding and agents are helping you doing all this stuff. And so that's kind of the goal, is to kind of keep on growing it and growing the property management. Just having fun doing it.
Yeah. Yeah. Remember the name, Bo Miles, because he's he's coming to your state. But no, that's awesome. Honestly, just by listening to you, man, I believe in everything you're saying, because I can tell you're a man of God, and by you, the way you say your words, they already sound truthful and like it's already been done. So that's awesome. So now I want to talk about the model. We talked about your real estate brokerage model.
Yeah.
How is your real estate management company modeled? Is it any different than what you see out there?
Very differently. And this comes because, again, there hasn't been a change in this industry. I don't know of a major change in property management. And so what we do is this. Every single month, we're going to charge you what we call a package. It's as low as $55 and as expensive as $79 a month. If your house has nothing wrong and you're paying $55 and your rent's $1,000, you're getting $945. Done. I transmitted yesterday. You're getting that. Let's say you have a problem. We're going to take 10% of rent that 1 month. So what we're trying to do is incentivize a couple of things. One, we're trying to incentivize us taking care of the properties well so that we don't continually have problem after problem after problem, which is beneficial for the tenant and for the owner in the end. Number two, we're trying to put money back in the landlord's hand, because here's the truth. Most properties probably only need something once a quarter, would probably be my average. Really and truly, a lot of them even less. I have some that, guys, I haven't been in the house, because they don't ask me to, the owners don't ask me to, in 3 years. Because the tenants pay on time, they're great tenants. We drop by, we make sure everything's clean and good. And they're like, we're golden. We're golden here. And so they've paid $55 a month and they have not paid anything else for years now. And so we do that because that's the truth. There's a lot of properties out there like that. And what that does is it puts more money back in the landlord's pocket. And secretly, my hope is you'll go and buy more properties and they keep on coming with us and we can help with all of that. So we do that for the sake of helping you guys be, or landlords. I'm a landlord myself. It's really why I started this, is because I have a property in Athens. I have one here in Madison and I have one now in Airbnb. Thanks to Josiah in Florida. And so, and it's one of those things that, you know, I also recognize, and I really want to be cautious here, the level of service I saw other management companies giving specifically in this town was so disrespectful to both the owner and to the tenant. We've taken over properties, guys, that were not, they're probably D properties, they're not great. And when you get in there, one management company hadn't even taken rent from a guy for a year. And they were like, yeah, we should probably evict. I'm like, yeah, we should probably evict. And not just that, they don't listen to them. I've had people be like, oh, my heater's been out for 6 months and nobody's come to fix it. And we get the property in day one, that's what we get. And we're like, goodness gracious. And so we saw that. We saw like property management companies in this town that would only take a check or money order. It was 2020. And I was like, what? I mean, I think probably the greatest invention for landlords is Venmo. I guess that's the biggest change for them. But like for me, we have an online portal. We make it all easy. I work from the beach whenever I can. I try to go and I want to spend time with my family. And so that's how we do it different, is that we try to be cheaper, we try to be more communicative, and we just try to be more innovative on everything we do.
Love it. Let's see. I want to talk about, okay, in effort to provide the most value for the listeners.
Yeah.
I know there are listeners out there that have, first of all, have bad property management right now. Because they own properties and their property managers are not doing a great job. If you own properties in the Huntsville area, give Bo a call with Essential Real Estate and you could save money. Bo, you're charging what again? It's not very much.
It's $55 is the cheapest he gets a month.
$55 at a minimum. And what's the maximum? $79
or something? Mm-hmm.
$55 to $79. So, you know, if your rent is more than $790 a month, you're paying under 10%.
Correct.
And you could be paying less. So, and Bo does a great job. He's managed properties for me. So, shameless plug for him right here. I know you California investors that are listening to this, that staff in Huntsville, they kept calling me 2 years ago. Y'all need a good property manager. So, look Bo up and give him a shot at it if you're unhappy with who you currently have. Secondly, if you're interested in starting your own brokerage and you like this low cost model and you want to talk to somebody about it, give him a shout. Maybe you guys could team up somehow. Absolutely. And he, you know, he wants to expand this to other states. So let's moving back to providing the max value for the listener here. For the listener who is self-managing their properties, let's talk about best practices to manage your own property, maximize your rent, maximize your tenants' likability of their experience there, and also minimize the amount of phone calls you're getting, the amount of headaches you're dealing with, and the amount of stress you're dealing with. What have you learned during your time as a property manager?
Don't put Band-Aids on stuff. Band-Aids don't fix bullet holes, no matter how much Taylor Swift wants to talk to you about it. It's not. And then, let me give you I can disclose this. I had an owner who he and I actually were finishing up this week. I've managed his property for about a year. And me and him just weren't jiving, to be honest with you. Fine guy, just kind of a little more demanding and like, you need to be here on a Saturday and you need to do this. It's kind of, this is what I'm doing. And honestly, I was like, hey, man, I don't got that in me anymore. So I'm going to turn this back over to you. We have a third.
Wait a minute. You said that I want this to be worth my time, basically.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
This is the common theme is you get busier, right? You have to respect your own time. Yeah. It's that I'm telling you, like, let me stop you real quick. I want to tell you guys something. If you don't respect your own time, nobody else will. People will take time from you as much as you'll give them and they want to do it for free and they're fine with it.
Yep.
And you will spend all your time, and it's great to help others, but if you spend all your time doing free activities, you can't make a living. Correct. So at some point you got to say, okay, is this going to be the most productive use of my time? If it's work hours and work activity, how can I maximize my productivity? It's not all about the money, but you have to draw a line and say, you know, is this worth it to me anymore? You know,
yep.
So this is an application of that.
Absolutely. This guy, I mean, he just wasn't telling me what he was doing. He's like, hey, can we meet? Can we do this? And I was like, what are we meeting for? And I couldn't get the answer. I was like, well, I'm not meeting you on a Saturday for unknown reason, basically. He didn't like it, kind of got mad at me. So I said, hey, we're going to be done. And tried to kind of handle it all well. He didn't really take it well.
He didn't love you not giving your free time to him.
No. We ended up meeting on the property at one point. He just got mad at me and walked away. Well, then he wanted to meet again last week. Well, keep in mind, at one point in May of this year, his tenants had no HVAC. It was 95 degrees outside during this time. And I was like, hey, man, I can call a company I work with in town. They can get out there today. He's like, no, I have this home warranty. They'll come out there and fix it. I was like, yeah. We've been waiting on them for 3 days. They're not calling us back. We call every day, 5 times a day. But we're not getting anywhere. You have tenants with no HVAC in their home. This is a big deal. And he just kept being like, no, wait. So it went a week and a half before they ever got anybody out there. It was two bad capacitors. If you know anything about an air conditioning, guys,
that's the best fix on an HVAC.
When they say capacitor, I'm like, and so basically he kind of upset them. And so they said, we're not renewing our lease. They said, we're out. So I told this guy I'm not going to do it. He wanted to meet there again this week. Y'all, he was supposed to be showing a prospective tenant, and the tenant never showed up. But he still wanted to walk the house and do this and do this. They came home from work. Y'all, they were so mad at him. They screamed at him the entire tour. And I'm like sitting there, like, hey, guys, calm down, calm down, calm down. Come on, come on, come on, come on. And so when you said, what have I learned? What I've learned is if you disrespect them, they're going to disrespect you. And the first place they're going to do it is in your money. They're not going to pay you. They're not going to pay you. And so if you want your money, respect people for people. When something's broke, don't put a Band-Aid on it. When a capacitor's bad, don't just put a window unit in it. Pay the $250 to have a capacitor fixed. When a compressor's bad, I know it's $1,000, $3,000, $4,000 to fix it. It stinks. It's no fun. Fix it. Because then all of a sudden, you're not going to have a vacancy. You're going to have recurring revenue. You're going to make all that money back. You're going to get your appreciation, depreciation, cash flow. We all know the, you know, loan pay down. You're going to be able to be taken care of. So the first thing I would say is don't put Band-Aids. And then two, make sure that you understand everything of it. Know the house. Know what you're getting. I know if you're an out-of-state investor, you got to understand the geographical area. I had one owner who was mad that we kept running the air conditioning when there was nobody in the house, but we were keeping it ready for showings. And I was like, yeah, it's 105 and a humidity of 10 million or some crazy number. I was like, if we put this with no air in, everybody who walks in is going to turn right back around and walk. And so trust your property manager, but if you're doing it self-managing, know the house, keep it up. If you don't take care of your property, your tenant's not going to take care of your property.
Right.
I don't care if it's an Airbnb. I don't care if it's a long-term. I don't care if it's what it is. They're not. Keep it up to date. And when people have an issue, answer quickly.
Yep.
If they call you at 9 o'clock at night on a Saturday, it may not be an emergency, but it's okay on Sunday or Monday to send a text that says, hey, I'm sorry I missed your call. What's up? Oh, we haven't had air. Oh my gosh. I wish you would have told me in a text, like my voicemail says, I'll get a guy up today, you know? And so it's just respect. That's the number one thing I would tell everybody. You want to make more money. You want to maximize your time. You want to keep tenants, respect them. Respect them as people. It's not that hard. So treat them like people and how you would want to be treated. You do that, you'll be fine.
Yeah, exactly. And I know one thing too, if you're not willing to live in the property that you manage, then you know there's already a problem there. So
absolutely.
You have to, I agree 100%. I mean, respect people. That's one of the things, like, right now, Bo, I manage my own properties.
Yeah.
And you may have a future customer because I'm getting to the point. Well, I told myself, you know, so right now, so far, it hasn't been that bad.
I tell people to always manage their first one. Always manage your first one because you will learn.
You learn exactly
what is going on. And you also learn why my job isn't always the easiest thing. And so, like, you kind of get the value. It's just like the first time you ever try to change, like, a toilet. You try to lift one up. Yeah, you realize why plumbers get paid what they do. We're really grateful. Exactly. I mean, not, but yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing too, you know, as a self-property manager, doesn't mean necessarily that I'm going to be over there changing the toilet. I mean, for example, the other day, water kept coming back from the faucet in one of my units. I just, you know, got on the phone call, called a plumber. He charged me a premium fee because it was on the weekend, which makes sense. You know, that's how they respect their time. And that's really many, kind of all it takes. But of course you have to be more involved when it's yourself versus having a property management company that does it for you.
I mean, but that's what I do. You know, I'm not out there changing the toilet.
Right.
In fact, one of the best lessons I ever got taught, my wife actually taught me this. We were in a house and a guy needed a mirror hump. And I was like, I'm just going to go over and hang the mirror. And she said, nope. It's like, baby, I don't know how to hang a mirror. I renovated our whole house. Like, by myself, I know how to hang a mirror. She said, no, you're not. I was like, why are you just saying no? Why can I not hang a mirror? And she said, what if it falls? Who's responsible?
Mm.
And I was like, well, me. She said, so now you're going to have to deal with the cleanup. You're going to, what if it scratches the floor? Now are you replacing the floor? What are you going to do? Your job is to manage the property, not to fix it. Mm. And so now, even though there could be something small that I can handle, I'm calling somebody.
Yeah, I
carry the insurance to do it. I don't carry the time in my time.
Exactly.
You know, and so, yeah, I agree. I'm not calling anybody special. And that's, I agree. We call plumbers. But again, you calling and getting it on a weekend told your tenant, this guy cares about me. He cares about his property. I'm going to do the same thing.
Mm-hmm. And that's the thing too. How much are you worth? That's really the question. Because I know, for example, me right now, I have a W-2. I get paid six figures. So you ask yourself, let's say, for example, I'm a $70 an hour kind of guy. Is my time worth going to hang a mirror in one of my properties, or is my time best spent with my family and my kid here in my house? Obviously, that should be an obvious question. That's the way you should see things, because you're taking time away.
Of this, right? This is my right there. We are doing this on a whole company going, we need to use everybody's time better, including mine. And so we're starting at the bottom and we're coming up. We're reevaluating every person because of that exact.
Yeah, and let me interject here. Every time you use your time to do something, and you're saying no to everything else, right? So let me take the Bigger Pockets interview, for example. When I did that Bigger Pockets interview, and I love connecting with people, like I connected with Bo. I love people reaching out and connecting. When you have 1,000 DMs, and I was just going through there trying to reply to everybody, and everybody wants to meet, you don't have enough hours in the day to do it, right? And you know that 80% of those people just want to meet. And I had a lot of meetings with people that absolutely nothing happened. And I had meetings with people that wanted to go see investment properties and never bought. You know, so there's a lot of things you'll do that will not produce anything, any kind of value, and will take time away from you. Well, during that time, you're saying no to going to lunch with your wife or going to do something with your kids, and you can't spend all your time just doing stuff with your wife and kids, because then you wouldn't be able to make a living, right? So there's a balance. Mm-hmm. But every time you say yes to something, you're saying no to everything else.
Yep.
So there, and it's back to Tony's point, you know, you got to properly value your time, your disposable time, if you will, on, is this the highest and best use of my time, to use an appraisal term? Would I rather use this hour doing this, or would I rather use this hour doing this other thing I know produces? Like for me, take this podcast, for example. I can spend an hour of my time meeting with one person, Bo, with Tony's my co-host, and thousands of people can listen to this.
Yeah.
So what's a better use of my time? Going to get lunch with one person I don't know, or meeting somebody online so I can leverage that time to reach thousands of people? You know, so it's like, it's things like that. So it's using leverage, and the same with property management. The number one reason to use a property manager is because you're leveraging someone else's time to free up your own time. If Tony's making six figures, he probably shouldn't be taking phone calls about, you know, whatever the problem is. That's not the highest and best use of his time. And it's fine.
Right.
He's done it. I mean, I manage some of my own properties as well. It's not like you're too good for it. It's just that you will develop yourself to a point where you get to this point and you're like, wow, I should go try to flip one extra house instead of answering all the phone calls from my tenants this year.
You know, we're doing it on the small level, Josiah. Amy, my wife, Amy and I have a decent sized backyard, right? It's about 3/4 acre. And I've got this rod lawnmower, and I'll get out there with a beer and just relax and mow my yard and have a good time. Well, two Saturdays ago, it was like when we were celebrating my birthday, me and my buddies go canoeing and everything. And I realized my friends were coming over that night to have kind of a back to school night. Now, my yard is gross. So I called one of our lawn guys who does some yard stuff for us at the company. It's like, dude, can you just go over there, mow my yard, weed eat it, make it look pretty before I come home? Sure, man. No problem. $55 later, I come home to a perfectly manicured lawn.
Better than what you would have done.
I was like, man, I enjoyed my time out on this, but the answer is, if I told him, so let's say by the time it's said and done, in a month, I'm probably going to mow it every single month or every single week in the summer. I'm probably going to end up spending a collective 5 to 8 hours on it in the summer per month. Okay, a work day. Well, it's going to be $200. I told my dad, I'm like, I don't want $210 or whatever it's going to be. And he's like, could you go sell a house in 8 hours? Yeah, he's like, could you recruit some agents in 8 hours? And I'm like, yeah. He's like, I don't know if that's really where you spend your time mowing your yard.
Yeah, I mean,
she's like, sell the mower, hire the guy.
Yeah, yeah. Take that for example. Let's say you spend an hour, and most people spend 2 hours. Let's say you spend an hour a week per month. Let's say you spend 4 hours a month on your yard. Okay. And you probably don't do as good a job as some professional lawn companies could do.
Absolutely.
If you own a brokerage and you just sacrifice cutting your own yard and you spent that 4 hours a month messaging agents that might want to work with you, you get one agent in, they bring a team of five with them. You just made yourself thousands of dollars for years, right? So that's leveraging your time. That's leveraging your time. And you basically did that because you used this lawn company who's, by the way, they leverage their time. They've got guys that work for them for $7 an hour. They charge you $55. They're leveraging their time as well. There's a system they've created.
And it looks better.
Exactly.
It looks better. Yeah.
One thing, another perspective to this is, as we continue to add properties to our portfolio, as we grow our company and we grow within our company, we get busier. I mean, our workload gets busier. But remember, for most of us, the goal really is to create a company, a system that allows you to spend more time with family, doing right. God's work, whatever that is that you want to do. So how do we do that? How do we grow our company and how do we get our time back? And the answer to it is what we've been talking just now. You know, leverage other people, use other people to do the things that are the least important for you to do, for you to spend your time on.
Yeah. And again, it's not that you're better. It's that, I mean, these guys who are mowing my yard, they love mowing yard. Mm-hmm. They are happy out there. It's not like I'm like hiring a guy who's miserable. He's choosing it. He wants it. He's happy out there. And so like, that's my thing. It's like always like, man, those guys are good. They do that. They do those things. And yeah, I mean, look, you're going to have that vision to get people on board. You're going to have to be clear about it. You're going to have to say no. That's another thing. There's a book called Choosing to Cheat. Just, I don't know if you've read it, Andy Stanley's book. And he talks about this. That you're going to cheat somewhere. It's either going to be your family or your job. Cheat your job. Don't cheat your family. Mm-hmm. And so I would tell you, man, my goal, look, we have a house in Florida, like I was saying. When it's open, we're trying to get down there. I want to work from there because I love the beach. I love my family at the beach. I want my kids to experience it. I want every moment with my kids. I'm not missing a baseball practice. I'm not missing a dance recital. I'm not. It's not a maybe. It's a I'm not. And if I lose a client for that, cool. Don't care. I really don't, because that's not the way we're building this. We're doing this and we are leveraging other people and we are respecting our time and their time and trying to make it good for everybody.
Yeah. And I mean, I have a testimony to this being a valid point in my own life, because I was miserable sitting in the cubicle back in the day. And I've said this before and I'll say it again, but when I left they were leveraging my time. When you were in a W-2 job, and it's fine, if you love your W-2 job, stay in it. I'm all about that. But if you're in a W-2 job and you don't love it, just know that they are leveraging your time and they're making money off of your time, which is the whole point of business, right? They have to be profitable on your time or it's not valuable for them to have you working for them, right? But are you leveraging your time to your best ability and maximizing your return on your own time? And if you're not, I would encourage you to think about what could do that. So the second I left my W-2 cubicle job and I started my business, that first year, I only made $30,000. $30,000, but that could have been the most important $30,000 I ever made, because it opened the floodgates to this idea of working for myself, being creative in my business, buying real estate, doing a podcast, all this stuff, which opened everything up. And the amazing thing is, only a few years after opening my own business, my income increased to six figures and then seven figures. And this is not made up. This is real stuff. And this can happen for everybody listening here. I'm not special. I've worked hard, but you guys can do this too. And that's why I want everybody to lock into this concept of what is the highest and best use of your time. You're especially good at something. What are you better than most at? And are you using that asset? That's an asset that you have. Mm-hmm. Are you maximizing return on investment on that asset that you have? Now, an employer is going to hire you and they're going to maximize their return on that. But how could you do that? Because that will open a lot of value in your life if you can figure that out.
Absolutely.
I saw a t-shirt the other day that the definition of wealth is time. Time to do whatever you want, time to go wherever you want to go. Everybody could be, anybody could be rich, but really anybody to do what they want when they want to, not everybody could do that, sadly.
No.
Look, man,
you're wrong. I mean, I'm in the trenches right now. Like, man, I'm working my tail off right now, but I also know it's for this goal. Like, I keep my vision. I remember speaking to what Josiah said when I first started the property management. I have a hot tub in my backyard, and I would out in the hot tub one night. I was just sitting there, and I was so frustrated because I had transmitted money, and I made $700 that month. That's it. But I had had the hardest month in property management. I made $700.
Yeah.
And but now we're growing and now I'm like, okay, we're good. But I was just tired. But you're in the trenches. It's not easy. You just keep going, get that vision and know when it's time, you're going to know to hire that lawn guy. You're going to know to hire people. I'm horrible at paperwork. Don't let me do your paperwork, please. But don't worry, I've hired some people who are awesome at paperwork.
Yeah. Bo, just that picture right there of you in your hot tub, man, just makes me want to go.
I'm loving, Bo, that you started your property management company from a hot tub, and you started your brokerage from a panic attack while listening to my podcast in the grocery store. I'm noticing a trend here. The next hardship you have, you're going to start another entrepreneurial venture.
Man, you would be shocked. I remember one day I was talking to a buddy and I was like talking about business ideas and he said, when do you think of this stuff? And I was like, oh, I don't really sleep. And I don't sleep, man. I don't know.
And you're like in the hot tub.
Yeah, I got a hot tub. And that's what the hot tub is for. Yeah, that's it.
That's awesome. Well, dude, this has been an awesome conversation. I hope the listeners have taken a lot of value away from this. I know that I certainly have. Bo, man, sky's the limit for you. God bless you as you build your brokerage. Guys, if you're in Huntsville area, and you're looking to save some money, yep, give Bo a shout, man. You can save money on your commissions. I am a licensed broker, and I have my own brokerage in Tennessee because I sell these vacation rentals. So I can't be licensed. I can't be the head broker in two different states. And so I'm under Bo. I'm a broker, but I'm under Bo in Alabama, and it has saved me a ton of money. So if you want to save money, which I know you do, give him a shout. And if you need your properties managed, give him a shout. Please. But other than that, if you're just an investor, you know, take a look at how you spend your time. Take a look at how you're valuing your own time and sit down, take 5 minutes, write down what you think your highest and best use of your time is, and ask yourself if you're leveraging that to its maximum potential. And I bet the answer is you're not. And if you're not, ask how you can, because that will unlock a lot of value in your life. So, Bo, man, thanks for coming on the show. We're going to wrap this up, and we'll see you next time.